Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Depending on where you're joining us from. And welcome to today's webinar, FSSC 22000, Getting Back on Track in 2021. My name is Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc. I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we are excited to be welcoming back a familiar face to our webinars, and that's Jacqueline Southey of FSSC. We'll be introducing her to you if you haven't met her before shortly in the presentation. But I'm going to go ahead and introduce first Paul DeMarin. He is the Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain here at PJRFSI. He joined us in January of last year and has over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail agri-food sectors. Paul's a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association. He's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. Before I came to PJRFSI, Paul worked for 16 years in the certification industry with clients in pretty much every sector, from food safety and supply chain to brand protection and quality. Paul's also worked for many years in management system certification, and prior to that, he was a professional chef and a consultant for over 20 years. So Paul, I'm going to hand things over to you, and you can take it away when you're ready.
Great. Thank you very much, Amy. I appreciate that. Welcome again, everyone, today to our webinar. I'm really looking forward to this one, and we thank you for your time. We're very excited to welcome back Jacqueline Southey to today's webinar. Many of you know Jacqueline as well, and we've decided to change our format for not only today's but all of our future upcoming webinars, and we're just going to be jumping right into the session. So I hope that you enjoy the new format. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Jacqueline Southey, who's the North American representative for the FSSC. And Jackie is the representative for FSSC in the Americas, and they are a globally recognized GFSI benchmark food safety certification scheme. She is based in Washington, D.C., and Jacqueline has worked to build a broader understanding of how the accredited FSSC 22000 certification can contribute to the global harmonization in food safety, forge international compliance, and meet the needs of the public and private sector along the way. She is a native of the UK, and Jacqueline graduated with a BSc in Agricultural Science and a PhD in Animal Science from the University of Nottingham. She also has a very long background in the transatlantic business development. And with that, Jacqueline, thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to engage with you throughout the presentation. And at that point, I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you very much, Paul. And thank you very much, Paul and Amy, for the opportunity to talk to you today. So it's great to be back in 2021. What a year 2020 was. I think we're all getting back up to speed now. I hope everybody everywhere is well. And gradually sort of getting business back on track. Certainly at FSSC we're very busy. We have just, as you know, updated the scheme to version 5.1, which I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about the key elements in the upgrade and talk about some of the things that we're doing to help industry get back on track, a couple of new FSSC services, and which include an update to our development program, a module that we've introduced for the non-food packaging sector, and just some more information about how you can get more information from us. So, a little quick recap on how we have arrived at version 5.1. It's actually 2019 that we celebrated our 10-year anniversary, and this is just an infographic really just to summarize our growth over the last 10 years. And just to see how we have evolved to reach the stage where we are with our 25,000 global certificates. We've grown from our scheme, our version one in 2010. We've introduced obviously our version five in 2019 that you'll all be familiar with introduction of ISO 22000:2018, and we've had to already update that in 2021 to version 5.1. Over the years, we've added to the scheme with the additional scopes that we add really at the request of the industry. You know, as we stay in touch with our stakeholders, and we expand the scope on demand as we can when ISO documents really become available. We're currently working with 128 certification bodies, 29 training organizations, and 41 accreditation bodies, and we refer to them as our partners, and we work with them very closely to offer with our CBs who we license to offer certification, and that's a very important part of our integrity program, which we'll come back to talk about a little bit later, which really ensures the reliability of this certification, which we have all over the world. And that's really a major part of FSSC. And we've also expanded our representation. We now have global representation. I have team members like me in China, in Japan, in India, South America, as well as head office in Europe, and myself here in North America. And the fact that we're all over the world ensures that we can keep the scheme internationally relevant. It ensures communication with our global partners, make sure everybody's up to date, and also make sure that we feed back information of everybody's individual needs around the globe. We work with an advisory body. We have an advisory committee, and we also work with a board of stakeholders, which keeps us relevant. And we have a management team that answers to that board of stakeholders, which covers our governance. So as we know, the SSSC is comprised of a three-part program. We have the ISO 22000 management framework, which provides the common management system requirements for which FSSC is known. And these apply, these are the basic requirements that apply across the supply chain. And that provides this risk-based process approach to manage the hazard analysis, communication, engagement of people, the management review and continuous improvement, which are a major part of that management system approach. The ISO management system is supported by the prerequisite programs, which support the different sectors to allow us to have the different scopes to cover the supply chain. And those are specific to the different sectors. And they provide the prerequisite programs that need to be required to minimize the risks that can be introduced from sanitation, workers, hygiene, environment, suppliers, contractors, and so on. And those are our prerequisite programs. And on top of that, we have the FSSC additional requirements. And it's those that we update to version 5.1. The ISO standards that FSSC is based on are international. They're publicly available. They're written by consensus, but they on their own do not meet the requirements of the GFSI. So the additional requirements for FSSC, they add the additional governance capacity to update, and they allow us to meet the requirements of the GFSI benchmarking. So here we are with our version 5.1. And to update the key drivers, why are we updating to version 5.1, having just updated to version 5? Well, the key drivers, obviously, for FSSC to go to 5.1 are the GFSI benchmarking requirements of 2020. These were released at the beginning of last year. For those of you that were at Seattle, remember the announcements of the 2020 benchmarking requirements. And as a GFSI benchmarked scheme, we obviously have to update our scheme to keep in line with those benchmarking requirements. It also has allowed us to incorporate the updates through our board of stakeholder decisions list, which is a part of our scheme and a mechanism to update the program. It's also provided us the opportunity for strengthening our integrity program. We've introduced an onboarding program for our CBs, and we've strengthened some of the requirements that our CBs need to meet, as well as to allow us an opportunity for continuous improvement. So that's really where we are. We've arrived at our new version 5.1.
Jackie, Paul here. A quick question. Can you just elaborate a little bit more? What exactly is the Board of Stakeholders decision list, and how do you think that's going to impact industry?
So thank you. That's a very interesting question. So the Board of Stakeholders decisions list, it's a dynamic document. It really should be considered part of our scheme. And as I mentioned, part of the governance of FSSC is this Board of Stakeholders. It's comprised of representatives from across the industry, from our major stakeholders, from different trade associations, and they provide us with input on the requirements of the industry, any changes, any issues that may be impacting the industry, and they kind of govern the scheme. And we have an opportunity to sort of produce this decision list with some amendments. So it's a dynamic document, it's published on our website, it's updated by our Board of Stakeholders when these issues arise that, you know, may, as I say, be introduced by industry or regulations or even feedback from our customers, and it's a way of management review and continuous improvement, and they should be considered as part of the scheme. We don't have an opportunity to update the ISO. Obviously, the ISO framework, that's done by sort of international committees. We just have this capacity to main, sort of keep ourselves updated through this Board of Stakeholders decisions list. So it's a very important document. It's very dynamic. It's very sort of current. And it is really part of the scheme. So when you're considering certification or recertification by FSSC, you need to also consider this Board of Stakeholders decision list, because they really are requirements. And it just keeps the scheme relevant and robust and a good certification program to protect food safety. So thank you for that. So that's the Board of Stakeholders, a very important part actually of FSSC. So it's moving forward. So, okay. All right. Thought I'd got stuck on my Board of Stakeholders decisions list there. So with our new version, there are some changes. There will be the change, as I said, some of the Board of Stakeholders decisions are now part of the scheme. They've been incorporated into version 5.1, and we've started a new Board of Stakeholders decisions list, which are also now published on the website. We have a track change document also on our website for reference. So this identifies the changes that have been made in version 5.1. They're very clear. They're clear in red. And that's available on the website to go and consult. And the upgrade process has also been published on our website. And this defines the process for moving from 4.1 or version 5 to 5.1, and accommodates the delayed version 5.0 audits, obviously, that we're dealing with as a result of COVID. So as we move forward, we must now, from April 1st, version 5.1 is now the valid scheme. So audits are now being conducted to version 5.1 as from April 1st. And the there's a document for the upgrade that will show the sort of, there's a the process, if you like, for updating. And I'm gonna just have problems here all of a sudden. All right, there we go. So we have a timeline on the website for updating from version 5 to 5.1. And as I said, we're having to accommodate some of the audit delays as a result of the COVID pandemic, which has obviously restricted travel, has closed some facilities to outside visitors, which include auditors. And so all of these we're accommodating with our sort of upgrade process. So we want to sort of stay in touch with industry and industry D to be able to accommodate this. So as from April 1st, all audits need to be conducted to version 5.1. And all audits by the 31st of March next year will need to be version 5.1. So there may be still some version 4 certificates, because version 5 came in last year. an upgrade audit needed to take place. And as I said, due to the pandemic, some of these have been delayed. But we need to move through, and all version 4 certificates will become invalid from the end of June of this year. So we do need to move forward and move everything through to 5.1. We can upgrade certificates from version 5 to 5.1 as surveillance audits or recertification audits. If your certificate has expired, you will need to undergo a recertification audit, but upgrade audits can also be unannounced. And there is still a three-yearly requirement for an unannounced audit to happen within that three-year cycle. So on our website, we have the upgrade process. So if you are undergoing the upgrading at this time, I do recommend you go onto our website to consult this table, because in some instances, you may end up having to do two audits within a year, particularly if you have been subjected to sort of a pandemic-induced delay. So I do recommend that you consult this upgrade process and see where you fit in that scheme. So again, if you have any problems, we're here to sort of talk to you and to sort of try and accommodate certified organizations to keep them relevant and to keep the food supply safe.
Jackie, it's Paul here again. So can you, there was a lot to look at on that slide. Can you maybe help us understand how we fit everything in here? And I would expect that certification bodies, plural, are going to have to work pretty closely with their customers to ensure nothing's missed here.
Yes, of course. As I said, there is a process, some of the audits can be conducted remotely. I will talk about sort of how we can accommodate if it's still difficult for you to get on site. But what we tried to do here in this process, and I said, I really do recommend that sort of people do consult this, and we can talk with you and also, Paul, like yourselves, to see where your clients fit in. So you have to upgrade your certificate from version either 4.1 or version 5 to 5.1 within the next year as it is. And if we find ourselves as this column in 2021, if you find that, you have already, if you don't have, I think probably the hardest thing to fit in, it would be the unannounced audit, because you have to have an unannounced audit within a three-year cycle. So as I said, there may be occasions we may have to fit in all the audits by doing two audits within the same calendar year, depending on where you are in the cycle. So it is going to be a challenge. We are aware of that. We are trying to be as transparent as possible. But as we've explained, we're dealing with the requirements of the GFSI, we're dealing with sort of industry's expectations, and we're also dealing with our requirements. So as I said, this probably doesn't cover everybody's scenario, but we've tried to sort of put the process for you to work with your clients, Paul, to get them updated to 5.1. So I think we're all in this together. We are having we do have a challenge, this is what we're doing to try and work with industry. So let's talk about what is involved in some of these requirements as we change through to 5.1. So what we've done is we have sort of reproduced the scheme. We hope that every time there is a major change that we won't have to change the scheme. That's one of the reasons for maintaining our board of stakeholders decisions list. But there were sufficient changes to produce the new scheme. And the scheme is, as you probably be aware, the scheme is divided into a number of requirements. We have requirements for our certification bodies. We have requirements for the certification process. We have requirements for organizations that are going, that are being certified. So for the most part, the additional requirements in part one are mainly editorial, and they include some of those Board of Stakeholders decisions lists that we have been talking about. And then the new requirements that we also include some of the GFSI requirements that have been brought in the new benchmarking document. And there's some new requirements for some changes for insurance of labeling for some products that may be sold without a label. You need to share information within the supply chain. There's a need to maintain verification of the prerequisite programs. There is also a need to verification of the prerequisite programs. We have some requirements for our multi-site certification. If you're a multi-site organization, we have increased the requirements for the internal audits. Again, all the requirements are really to maintain the integrity of the certification program. We have some changes in the audit duration, some reporting requirements, some integrity program requirements, and some portal requirements for our auditors and our certification bodies. So,
Jackie, looking at the, you know, these key changes and updates here, and thanks for showing this, but what do you think are going to be some of the, you know, biggest impacts or challenges for companies today based on this new standard?
So actually, I think probably the first thing that people will have impact is possibly the change in audit duration. And this is a GFSI requirement. And the GFSI has deemed that there is going to be a minimum audit duration of 2 days for those companies in categories C, D, I, and K. So that's food processing, animal feed, packaging and biochemicals, so manufacture of food and feed. And so that the minimum audit duration is going to be 2 days, unless that we do have some exceptions, and that's for those that are small companies with only one HACCP study, that there could be some opportunities to reduce the audit duration. But it may be that you have up until now had maybe a 1 or 1.5 day audit, or your audit has been sort of corrected down to a shorter time. Moving forward, you may find that your audit days are actually longer, and you may have to accommodate that. I think that's probably going to be the first impact. There will be subsequent impacts for sort of, as I said, making sure that you're verifying your prerequisite programs, and possibly in the food safety culture area, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. So I think that's probably the main impact. There is also an impact with the strengthening of the integrity program, whereby we require the certification bodies that we're working with to have a minimum number of certificates and maintain a minimum number of certificates. And this is all in the interest of the integrity program and maintaining the integrity of the scheme. So,
Jackie, sorry, again, the integrity program, I think, is actually a great idea to help maintain consistency, globally. For me, I think of, a Big Mac in Toronto is the same as a Big Mac in the UK. And if you have consistency among the FSSC audit programs, so companies know if they're choosing FSSC, that the audit they have in Chicago is the same as Beijing. So I really have, I guess, two questions. One, can you elaborate a little bit more on what exactly this integrity program entails? And how are you going to ensure that all CBs are conforming to the same level?
Yes, thank you. So the integrity program is actually a very important part of FSSC. As I mentioned right at the beginning, we span the globe. We've got 25,000 certificates all over the globe. And as you said, it's important to have the same confidence in a certificate that you may have in Tokyo that you would have in Chicago. So the integrity program is sort of the foundation system of monitoring the CBs, certification bodies that we work with. We have a program where we license them. So when we take on certification bodies, is a process of bringing them on board and licensing them, and then monitoring them throughout the process of auditing the facilities to make sure that the certification is consistent. We have a series of KPIs that we maintain with RCBs, and that includes sort of maintaining communication with us, participating in our harmonization conference. We have monitoring activities such as desk reviews, random audits when they're uploaded into our portal. We'll do on-site audits with our certification bodies. We'll visit them and review the documentation. We may even conduct witness audits. So it's just a way to maintaining contact and making sure that everything's consistent. And, you know, we have to make sure that we're consistent globally, and we work with our CBs to do that. And it's really all in the interests of sort of our certified customers. Our certified organizations and the customers of our certified organization. So it's throughout the supply chain to maintain this confidence and this consistency. And so, you know, it's an ongoing program, and really it's just to make sure that everybody's performing in the same way. And this new regulation, really, with maintaining a minimum number of certificates within version 5, is to make sure that, you know, the service that we give our certification bodies is also good. And it makes sure that, you know, we're using our resources to the best of our abilities, and that the auditors that are working within those CBs have enough certificates that they're working on in order to maintain, you know, their qualifications. All GFSI auditors have to do a minimum number of audits per year, and if a certification is not maintaining that number of certificates, then the audit quality is potentially jeopardized, if you like. So we want to make sure that we give our CBs the best service that we can, and we want to make sure that our CBs give our certified organizations the best service that we can. So thank you for that question. And again, it's all about GFSI recognition. And FSSC is now submitted the scheme version 5.1. With our 5 key scopes to the GFSI for benchmarking. It's out for public consultation, so it's in progress. So the whole reason for FSSC really to be in existence is to keep the ISO 22000 management system benchmarkable and viable business option for the industry. So our GFSI recognition is very important. So it's in progress. And we're pleased to sort of make that, you know, move that on forward. So again, coming back to the GFSI requirements and the food safety culture. So the requirement for a food safety culture element in this current benchmarking, the benchmarking requirements is new to GFSI. And as part of those requirements, they state that there is a requirement for evidence of a management's commitment to establish, implement, maintain, and continuously improve the food safety management system with elements of food safety culture. And the elements that they have identified as being key in the maintenance of a food safety culture include communication, training, feedback from employees, and performance measurement on food safety related issues. And so food safety culture obviously is a very, I was going to say a buzzword, but I think that's too flippant, but food safety culture has been recognized now as being a very important element of maintaining food safety within the supply chain. It is a potential risk. So if you have a bad food safety culture, then of course that is a risk. And it all revolves around people. The culture is maintained by your people, your employees, your management. And it's defined as, you know, being the behavior or the key elements, the values and beliefs or norms that affect the mindset and behavior toward food safety within an organization. We believe at FSSC 22000 that food safety culture is an inherent part already of FSSC 22000, particularly with the upgrade of ISO 22000 to 2018. a lot of the elements of 22,000 revolve around communication. They revolve around empowerment of the employer. They revolve around engagement. It revolves around a plan, do, check, act and feedback mechanism. So we believe that all the core elements of food safety culture are already met in ISO 22000. Well, we did review how we would actually use this and to have it as an auditable element and how we can demonstrate to your customer that you have a valid food safety culture. We do believe that you can't actually run an ISO food safety management system according to ISO 22000 without a food safety culture. And we don't believe that you can have a food safety culture without a good food safety management system. But we want to share this. So what we have done is we've produced a guidance document to help everybody to realize where their food safety element, food safety culture elements exist within FSSC. And so it outlines how food safety culture is covered in ISO 22000 and how it can be audited or how it can be assessed. And this is how we approach food safety culture. And the element that the format of the guidance document looks like this. So within the GFSI position paper, they have listed a whole load of guiding questions. And so what we have done is we pulled these guiding questions out and we've incorporated them into this guidance document and listed them and then related those to the clause within ISO 22000, which is most relevant to that particular aspect of the maintenance of the food safety management system. And then we've also included suggestions in how the auditor might assess how it's being met. So without having to go through the whole of this document, I would suggest that you do read the document, relate it back to the GFSI requirements or your own way of determining culture. But an example would be, so how is your company's vision and mission expressed so that it's understood? An important part of the culture is that the people working within the organization are aware of what the food safety mission is. And that's identified within the GFSI as being a key element. We believe that that's already written into ISO 22000. We've identified it as being under sort of clause 5.2.2, that the food safety policy should be communicated and understood and applied at all levels within the organization. That is part of the requirements. So that's already happening if you are FSSC certified. What you may need to do or may what the auditor may ask is how you're doing it. So while we have stipulated what you need to do, everybody is able to do it in a different way. It's a flexible management system. So they will ask you how you are doing it. And so the auditor may be assessing, you know, how you've verified, how is everybody seeing that these expectations are understood by the staff. And this may be through an internal audit, it may be through a survey, may be through a dashboard. So however that's being done, every company may have different mechanisms of doing it, but you're probably doing it because you are meeting those requirements, you may just not have identified it as being part of that food safety culture. So this explains how the culture is met. This is our approach to food safety culture. As I said, we believe that that it's covered and we believe that it's an important part of the ISO management system standards. Because what an ISO management system does, it describes and defines the procedures to support a process to improve efficiency. That's the whole point of the management system. And in order to do that, the process requires the management commitment, it requires leadership, and it requires engagement and involvement of all employers. You can't have this process without that process. The system establishes routines and habits, and all these contribute to a safety culture, and that ultimately reduces the risk. And the competence and awareness of the individual contribution is very important as part of the culture. And so that strengthens that awareness and the involvement of the individuals within the organization contribute to that culture, they strengthen it, and that all leads to the continuing improvement. An example of where this is happening or is already happening based on this management system approach is the aviation industry. The aviation industry has this culture of safety, and it revolves around the processes. It doesn't matter. I always use an example of doesn't matter what size plane it is, the pilot is still going to do the same process. He can be flying, he could be piloting a Dreamliner, or he could be driving piloting a Cessna. He's still going to do the same check. You'll still see the pilot walk around the plane and go through the same check because it's part of the culture. So that's how that process, it's a long-winded way of saying how culture is embedded, it's baked in for the ISO management system. Our guidance document is our aid to help you bring it out and to exhibit it. So
just on the culture, how does FSSC expect companies to measure food safety culture today? Because I know that a lot of the different schemes out there look at this topic in different ways. So how are you going to expect the companies to measure it?
So we don't stipulate how a company should do it. You're right. So different companies will have different methodologies. Obviously, the companies they're different sizes, they have different complexities, they have different numbers of HACCP programs, they produce different products. So we don't stipulate how it should be measured, we just stipulate that it needs to be done, and we provide guidances and processes through which it can be done. So for instance, in the measurement, it would be all done with the management review, with the internal audits, with having feedback from employers, just as the regular plan, do, check, act process of the management system. So we provide that mechanism, and it's all, as I said, it's all written in to the ISO 22000 management system, but we don't specify exactly how you would do it. You could do it, as I said, either with a survey, you could do it through the internal audit with questionings, you can do it at the end of the day on a dashboard, using the internal computer system or intranet. We don't specify how it's done. We just explain what needs to be done and how it all works together. Does that make sense? So that's part of the flexibility of sort of FSSC 22000. So applicable to sort of any size. But we've stipulated what needs to be done, and we've suggested what the auditor looks for and how it could assess in the guidance document. We haven't specified this is what you have to do. This is how you, this, we specify what you have to do. We don't specify how you have to do it. So just moving on quickly as we come out and we're sort of recovering from sort of the pandemic, I hope that people are starting to get back to a little bit of everyday life. I know it does vary around the world, and I have colleagues that are still suffering under the weight of the impact of the pandemic. But as we move forward, FSSC continues to monitor the impact of the pandemic. We're aware of everybody's needs. We've really tried to adapt, through the year to meet the needs of industry and the audit process without compromising the integrity of the audit. We've maintained our communication with our certification bodies, our brand owners, and our stakeholders to meet their needs. We know that companies don't want sort of outside influences into their facilities, but we know that the stakeholders need to ensure the safety of the supply chain and their suppliers. So we're working with everybody to try and maintain this. So we did stay in line with the GFSI. We had an option for maintaining certification by extending it for 6 months and or postponing the audit for 6 months. With the FSSC, we do have the 3-year certification cycle with the need for a surveillance audit within the calendar year. So companies might not have had their certificate expire, but they have had to have maintained a surveillance. And one of these things, one of the way that we have done this is to determine the role of remote audits and the use of ICT within the certification cycle. So we have two options. We developed two options. One of them is a permanent part now of the FSSC 5.1. And that's what one of the annexes. So we have annexes that we add to the scheme, and Annex 9 defines the use of ICT information and communication technology. And we have defined how this can be used to achieve GFSI recognition. It's a two-part process. It's a part in a head where you can conduct it remotely. And then the second part is conducted on site. There is a minimum interval that needs to be between the part one and the part two. And again, you know, we've sort of accommodated this if we still can't get on site, but it is a two-part process. We meet the requirements of the IAF documents. IAF MD4 is a guiding document for FSSC 22000, which defines the requirements of ICT and how they need to be used, you know, how they have to be appropriate, how they have to be usable by both sides, and that they deliver the results, and they have to be secure. And we have a list of requirements that they need to meet. Before you do a remote audit, they need to meet the risk assessment. It needs to be a viable option. If it's a very high risk situation, then maybe the remote approach may not be suitable. It all comes into this sort of risk assessment, this risk-based approach. We also have a full remote audit option, which is available for use during a serious event such as the pandemic and when on-site audit is not possible. And this is on our website as an addendum. It's not currently GFSI recognized, but it does still result in the same accredited certification. The audit is still included in the integrity program. It is still uploaded onto our portal. It is still reviewed, and it's available as an option to maintain, you know, the viability of the supply chain through this pandemic. So we have these two options. They're available for use now. To use the full remote option, you know, there has to be sort of adequate rationale for doing it. They all need to be preceded by a risk assessment and a feasibility assessment, but there are tools there really to sort of move us forward and get us on with industry. So we also have the development program, which could be used as we come out of this pandemic. The development program is initially aimed at small and medium-sized companies, and it's like FSSC Lite. It's the minimum elements of the food safety management system that can be used by companies as a tool to sort of start up a food management system. It's aligned with FSSC 22000 and ISO 22000, with Codex HACCP, and with the GFSI GMP Global Market Program. And it, as I said, it contains the essential elements of food safety management, and it can be used to get companies on the road to food safety management. It's recognized by a number of major retailers, and we now have scopes available not only for manufacturing companies, but also for the retail and catering industry. So for those parts of the sector that want to sort of take in some, you know, a better handle on risk management, going back to work, this is quite a useful way of beginning that journey. And the reason that it's useful is that we have online these self-evaluation tools. And so this sort of lists the minimum requirements for food safety management, and it allows an organization to do a gap assessment. And these are all freely available. It also provides a training module. And then once you have sort of reached that basic level of conformity, a conformity assessment body, which needs also to be a licensed FSSC certification body, can do a conformity assessment, and you receive a conformity statement. It's not full GFSI certification, but it gets you on that road, and it starts you on that way of food safety management. So it provides a stepping stone approach, and that's quite useful because you can start at the level one and receive your conformity assessment. then you can do more requirements. There is a level two as you get more proficient, get more sophisticated in your management system, and then ultimately you can achieve full GFSI FSSC certification. So, but this is a good way because we have the documents on the website, and it's very clear on how you can start achieving food safety management. So, and then really quickly, a new service for FSSC is a non-food packaging module. And this is also has been produced on account of a demand by industry. There was a gap that we have been seeking to fill. And this is in association with HPC 420, which is Household Personal Care Product Standard, based on the BSI, the Publicly Available Statement 420. And the reason that it's in association with this is FSSC alone is just for food. HPC is a licensed organization that can work with non-foods. So working together, FSSC has this non-food packaging module, and it's available to extend the certification of FSSC certified packaging manufacturers who want to provide packaging to the non-food industry. So it's to certify packaging manufacturers who manufacture packaging for both food and non-food. And it also still provides that total food safety management system of the manufacturing site. So if you are currently certified for packaging for food and you want to extend your client base to move into a non-food area, then this module is now available. And the way it works, it supplements FSSC packaging certification with which needs to be also supplemented by ISO 9001. It's an additional module that is used to provide that certification. So it's used as an addendum in combination either with FSSCQ for packaging or FSSC 22000 packaging with ISO 9000. And the module's been developed, as I said, in association with P&G, now a packaging organization. And it's based on the requirements that have been defined by iCompliance, which is a compliance platform which is used by the personal products industry. And the relevance of it is it extends, as I said, the customer base for FSSC packaging companies. It reduces the need for multiple brand supplier audits. It demonstrates effective management of safety and quality, like FSSC does through production. And also to cover change management, provides confidence to customers, and it's covered by the HPC integrity program. So again, integrity is all important, and it meets the requirements of the iCompliance program. So Paul, I don't know if you want to talk about a little bit more about iCompliance in this at this point.
Yeah, I will. But I guess I just had a question on, because the module is fairly new, you know, you mentioned that it was developed in association with P&G, et cetera, but can you help me understand what drove the inception of it? You know, why now? Why this standard?
Yes, well, we work with a number of companies, as you know, and many companies have multi-functions. And a lot of companies also have found that FSSC alone, because it only certifies packaging for the food industry, can be a little bit restrictive. So while they may be running ISO management systems for health and safety like 45,000 or 14,000 for environmental management, they either run ISO 22000 on loan, which is not GFSI benchmarked, or another GFSI benchmark program that does facilitate non-food, but they can't integrate all the management systems, so it's not necessarily efficient. So this adds another tool for them to add into their integration. So for companies that are already sort of, you know, aren't running FSSC but are running other management systems that want to run FSSC to extend their customer base to food and non-food, this is the module that can be used. Or it can be for those companies that are already, you know, running FSSC that want to extend their customer base. So it just is another way of extending really the value proposition for FSSE. I think that's a good, and also to stay in line with eye compliance.
Right. Yeah, and we offer certification in partnership with eye compliance for BRC as well. So we're happy to see that FSSC is now a part of that, and we look forward to supporting it.
That's great, and we are too. And so this model is available. It's on the HPC 420 website. It's very new, and as we said, it's available only through our licensed certification bodies, and we're delighted that PJR is one of those. So just really looking to the future, I don't think I have really much more to add. I'd really love some feedback. I'd love to take some of your questions. But a few things that are still out there, we're still working on. The FSSC development program obviously is a very valuable tool at this time to bring sort of new companies into the supply chain that is a bit fractured under the pandemic, or to help existing businesses that want to have some additional insurance, you know, as they're coming back into business. And we are currently piloting a remote option for that. So we haven't got a remote option right now because from the risk assessment point of view, we really think it's beneficial to have boots on the ground in those new companies coming into that sector. But we are looking at the feasibility of offering that program remotely. We have an addendum that we're working with on the to extend transportation to the for the transportation of refrigerated goods. We're working on that. We've been working on that with Imato for some time, and that's expected to be available, which will be available probably as an addendum. And then we're also developing our portal for brand assurance, and this is a help for everybody, not only your customers but your certified organizations. And this is allowing sort of brand owners to really have more information about those suppliers that are FSSE certified. So that's really just adding more transparency to the supply chain. So I think with that, again, you know where to find us. We have a website. We have all the scheme documents are available on the website. They're available in multiple languages. We have the guidance documents, which include the food safety guidance document, have guidance documents on food defense, and other guidance documents. We also have our brochures, some videos that you can share with your customers and with your teams. And we have a general newsletter that you can sign up with, and we keep in touch. So with that, I'm going to close, and we'll open to some questions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. A great presentation as always. As Jacqueline mentioned, it is almost time for questions, so please get those questions in. I'm just going to really quickly show you guys some of our upcoming webinars. These are all free to register for, just like any other webinar we offer. So we would really hope to see all of you on one of these. We do have I think there's still, you know, almost 20 on the schedule through June. So we definitely have lots of content coming up for all of you. All right. Let's see. I've got a question here, Jackie, from Farah. Farah says, does that mean the non-food packaging can be covered by FSSC 22000?
That's exactly what it means. Yes, it does. But you have to have an FSSC certification. So it's not a standalone. It means that if you're currently certified for packaging to FSSC, you can add that module, which will then extend your customer base to cover non-food. Yes.
All right, excellent. We've got a question here from Tim. Tim is asking, for a organization that has never been certified to any standard before, do you have any recommended first steps before pursuing FSSC certification?
Well, thank you very much for that question. I couldn't have put it better myself. I would suggest you, first of all, you go to the website and you just look under the section on the development program. And the development program is very specific on the sort of requirements that are involved in establishing that food safety management system. And then if you want to go to that first stage for a conformity assessment, you can certainly do that, get a relationship going with the certification body. And then if you find that it suits your requirements, you can expand that and move to full GFSI FSSC certification. But my first step would just be to go and, you know, read those requirements. I would also suggest that if you're interested in the ISO approach, to sort of go on the ISO website And for 22000, they've just released a handbook on ISO 22000. I didn't mention it in this presentation today, but there is an ISO 22000 2018 handbook, which is very explicit. It's a very good way. It's a very good place to start. It just makes sense. So I would suggest you you have a look at that. But go to FSSC website and look at the development program first. And then if you have any questions, please feel free to email me. Once you get the copy of the slides, my email is on that last slide. I'd be happy to talk to you.
Yep, there we go. I'll just leave this slide up in case anyone needs to take a picture or write down some contact info. Great. Yeah. Thank you, Jacqueline. Let's see what else we've got here. I'm seeing a couple of questions of people who are looking for the slides. Those slides should be available from the PGRFSI website within the next couple of days. The recording will also be posted to our YouTube channel for you to review or to share with someone who couldn't attend. All right, let us see here. Ooh, this is a good question. Jacqueline, do you see any further changes coming to FSSC after 5.1?
I will never say no. So I think, so there are already some adjustments, which you can see on the Board of Stakeholders decision list right now from the February meeting. I hope that we can stay with 5.1 for a little while, because, you know, as you realize, to do a big scheme revision, it's, you know, it's a lot. But if the GFSI or if industry decides that they want to add some requirements, then we will have to accommodate them. But I hope for now we can, you know, all get in the groove with 5.1, with our food safety culture, you know, with our integrity program, and live with this for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. GFSI is king, of course. Yeah. All right. I don't see any more questions in the box right now. If you have those questions, please don't be shy. Get them in. In the meantime, while we wait and see if there's any other questions, Jackie, do you have any other, you know, general advice or words of wisdom you'd like to share with the attendees?
No, I would suggest that you do go to the website and, you know, and read, and then, you know, peruse, have a look at some of the brochures and the information. And if you are interested, as I said, in ISO 22000, I would recommend just looking up that handbook. And it is quite good how it explains the process of food safety management, you know, the benefits and how to make it work for you. So, you know, the risk assessment and what a risk-based management system is, it's very good. It's good reading.
Yes. Yes, and I'm sure you're familiar too, Jackie. We are also big fans of free resources. If anyone missed our previous webinars with Jackie, we do have all the recordings and the slides from those previous webinars on our website. So those might also be a good resource just for you to get more familiar with the standard. I didn't see any other questions come in. If you did have a question that, you know, maybe it was a little too personal to ask live on the air, or you're too shy to ask on the air, that's totally fine and understandable. Do feel free to reach out. Jackie's contact information is on the screen right here, or you can email PGRFSI at pgrfsi@pgrfsi.com. It's a pretty simple email, and we'd be happy to answer any questions or at least get them to the right person to answer that question. So Jackie, just once more on behalf of everyone at PJR and PGRFSI, thank you so much for taking the time to present for us. As always, it was a great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, Paul, for the questions. That was very good.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you to everyone who took the time to attend. We hope to see you on a future webinar, and I wish you all a good rest of your week.
Thanks, Amy.